Kilkenny 101.9 FM, stream at cfrc.ca, or listen anytime on the CFRC Podcast Network. The Kingston Curator, your backstage pass to Kingston's creative scene.
You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM, your campus community radio station, broadcasting to you since 1922.
Hey everyone, it's 3 p.m. and you're listening to the Kingston Curator on CFRC 101.9 FM. I'm Ellie Sturton, the host of the Kingston Curator, and every Friday, 3 p.m., you can join me for all things arts. Tune in to hear interviews with local artists, authors, musicians, and more. I talk about the latest arts news and upcoming events. You won't want to miss it. Today, I'm going to start by giving you a brief rundown of what's happening around town this weekend, and then we'll get into some interviews. Today I had the pleasure of talking with local Kingston artist Savannah Shea. She's a singer-songwriter and most recently has been involved in the After Always production performed as a part of the Ground Up Dance Festival. I also talked with BC Gorey from the Kingston Arts Council about their Artist Prosperity Project. Its goal is to help increase funding and support for the artistic economy. Alright, so coming up are your live music events happening around town this weekend. On Friday, catch day two of the Holyrood Country Jamboree in Corbyville. You'll see Aaron Goodvin, Rudy Gunn, and more. Or head to Hotel Wolf Island for day one of the Analog Island Festival, a night of experimental music, live bands, and vinyl DJ sets. Day passes for that one are $30. The Mansion hosts Metal Night with Doom Boys, The Pale Horse Ritual, Arachnia, and more. Doors open at 8 p.m. and tickets are $11.98. Now, if country's more your thing, Ambush plays a free outdoor set at Springer Market Square from 7 to 8. And later that night, at The Merchant, Squid Pistol hits the stage with high-energy alternative rock covers from 10:30 p.m. to 1 a.m. On Saturday, start with Saturday Sessions, live music in Confederation Park from 11:30 to 3:30. This week features Django's Kitchen, Oscar Boss Sax, and Mauricio and the Latin Beat Band. Or, over at Base 31's Drill Hall, Montreal Dream Pop Legends stars hit the stage with Ruby Waters at 7:30 p.m. Tickets start at $55. And the Holyrood Country Jamboree continues in Corbyville with a stacked Day 3 lineup including George Canyon, Mackenzie Leigh Meyer, Fiddlesticks, and more. And at Hotel Wolf Island, the Analog Island Festival continues with experimental sets, film screenings, and queer karaoke. Also on Saturday, the Mansion Summer Kickoff Fest goes from 3 to 10 p.m. on the patio with plenty of live bands, barbecue, lawn games, and sunshine. Tickets start at $22.63. And if you're looking for something nostalgic, catch a Beatles tribute show at the Spire from 7 to 9:45 p.m. Tickets are $42.50 and the event fundraises for food and housing programs through Lion's Heart, Inc. And finally on Sunday, start your day off with jazz brunch at the Black Dog Tavern from 11:30 to 2:30 p.m. Or at Time Out Bar and Bistro, folks can see Lady and the Lads perform classic country starting at 3 p.m. Over at Finkelshore Park, Live Music Sundays runs from 2 to 5 p.m. with David Shutter at 2, Barry Ewan and his trio at 3, and Willows and Oaks at 4. At Hotel Wolf Island, day 3 of the Analog Island Festival runs from 12 to 5:30 p.m. and features jazz, ambient, and experimental performances with Tone Map and Wallace, Potions, and Sandro Perry. And finally, folks can see the Co-Conspirators perform live at the Epinicon from 1 to 4 p.m. with a relaxing set of acoustic folk and roots by the canal. Have a local concert that you would like covered on CFRC's website and our news programming? Contact us today via cfrc.ca. And now let's hear about some great community events happening around town this weekend. On Friday, folks can head back to Springer Market Square from 6 to 7 p.m. for free line and square dancing lessons. Whether you're new or experienced, it's a great way to kick off your Friday night in the square before the live country music begins. On Saturday, it's time for the Bloomin'Berry Strawberry Social at the Spire from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Enjoy strawberry shortcake, garden games, crafts, live music, and a strawberry hat parade, all in support of the Bloom Skills Center. Admission is $15 and includes dessert, drinks, and activities. And finally on Sunday, start your day off with yoga in the park at Battery Park from 10 to 11 a.m. This free outdoor session is led by local instructors and you just need to bring a mat. In the afternoon, Baha'i Fireside Sunday happens at 2 p.m. in the lower hall at the Spire. It's an open, informal discussion about unity and peace, hosted by the Baha'i community of Kingston. Refreshments are served and all are welcome. Have a local event that you would like covered on CFRC's website and our news programming? Contact us today via CFRC.ca. Those were the events and concerts that folks can look forward to this weekend. Now coming up, you'll hear a conversation between myself, Ellie Sturton, and Savannah Shea. Savannah is a Kingston singer-songwriter and multidisciplinary artist. Recently, she has been working on a multidisciplinary performance called After Always. It ran as a part of the Ground Up Dance Festival, which will continue in Kingston until July 12th. We talk all about the collaborative artistic process, the concept of transformation, and learn more about the Ground Up Dance Festival as a whole. Hi everyone, you're listening to The Kingston Curator. I'm your host Ellie Sturton and today I'm joined by Savannah Shea. She's a Kingston-based singer-songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, visual artist, and poet. So Savannah, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I love all those things that I wrote about myself that sometimes feel true and sometimes don't feel true, depending on what season I'm in.
Well, you know, artists, it's all about change.
Absolutely.
I mean, I was finding out what you do and it's a little bit of everything.
Yes, it feels that way. Like I think of poet, for example, it's like I used to write all the time and like share words I had written and I haven't done that in so long. So I'm like, oh, maybe I should take that out. But I'm like, nah, it stays, you know.
It's still a part of you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Constantly changing.
Part of the creative development process, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So today I wanted to talk about the Ground Up Dance Festival.
Absolutely.
And the recent show that you were just a part of and created, After / Always.
Yeah. After Always. So first of all, thank you for having me on to talk about the dance festival. I am obsessed with dance. I've always been obsessed with dance and I've been so excited to be involved in this festival since its inaugural year 4 years ago. So it's like nice to come on and share. I'm not one of the main creators of the festival, so I'm sort of like a slightly outside of it. So I hope that as someone who's not like the center of the whole project talking about it will like entice other people to come and be involved. So last week the festival started. It runs from June 25th, or it ran from June 25th until the 12th. I was in a show that opened the festival. It was myself, Christina Foster, Anna Sudak, and Kay Kenny, and we were all working in the Baby Grand Theater. And this is a show that we've been working on for the last like 18 months or so. Over a year ago, we did a workshopping session through the Imagine Project, which is an arts incubator through the Isabel Bader Theater that has artists come in and kind of, you can kind of work on anything. Like you apply and you get to, you know, we have creation time, recording videos, whatever. So we ended up creating the initial stages of the show, recording a video and then using that to apply for further granting. And then that's what we got to use to put on the show at the festival. So that doesn't really explain what the show is. That's sort of like how we got here.
Now, before we continue listening to this amazing interview, I wanted to take a moment to highlight the Imagine Arts Incubator. The Imagine Arts Incubator was developed in 2020 to foster creativity and innovation and to enable Kingston and national professional artists and creators to explore, invent, collaborate, and produce. The program supports artists and their projects through the granting of venue space, production staffing, and artist honoraria. It provides an excellent opportunity for professional artists and creators to immerse themselves in artistic research and development to explore new collaborations, styles, concepts, and performance practices. The Isabel initiated the Imagine Arts Incubator Program to support creation-based residencies, filming, recording, and streaming initiatives for original works, socially engaged arts projects tackling the issues of our time, and creative placemaking for community engagement in the arts. And of course, you can visit the Isabel Bader Center for the Performing Arts website and find more information in their competition section. Now let's get back to my conversation with Savannah Shea to learn more about the collaborative performance that emerged from her experience in the Imagine Arts Incubator.
The show itself was a multidisciplinary representation of transformation, I guess, is maybe the simplest way to say it. So there was dancing, a lot of movement choreographed by Kay Kenny, who is the director of KSD, Kingston School of Dance, and is the director of the Ground Up Dance Festival. So she was in the show as well. And she choreographed the movement. And then Anna and Christina and I are all in a trio and we're all musicians. And so there was a lot of music, songs, sort of vocalizations. And then there was also theater aspects, like dialogue. So it was really everything all mixed together. You could call it kind of an abstract musical maybe, but not with like an ABCD storyline. And all of us individually and collectively were exploring transformation. So like the title After Always is explaining who are we after a moment of change. Like there's sometimes we have these moments in our life where we're like a person before and then something happens and then we're a different person after that. But then who are we also always? So like what is the thing that is consistent about us throughout our lives, and then how do we change as we grow, I guess. It's very hard to explain, but that's kind of the fun of it. So you kind of get to come and see what it is for, I mean, it's over now, but hopefully there'll be other iterations of it in the future. And my boyfriend was funny. He was like, you came home from every rehearsal, showed me videos, told me literally every single thing about it, and I arrived and couldn't have been prepared for what I saw.
It's hard to describe something that, like, multidisciplinary art, especially. Mm-hmm. I think when it's not something that's, like, the classic form of the art,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
you can't always describe that to people, but
yeah.
I mean, those are the shows that always inspire me because it's seeing something new, right? It's
yeah.
seeing something very unique.
It felt very unique. It felt maybe so unique to the point where like days before the show, I was like, what is this? Like, what are we presenting? Not in a way of like, I didn't believe in it, but in just a like, how are people going to respond? I had no idea. And a lot of that trust goes into goes to Kay Kenny because I've seen her put on many dance shows before, and her way of working is very experimental, and it's not dance like pirouettes and, you know, ballet. Like, it's not that kind of dance. It's movement based. There's like lots of pedestrian movements, and so I've seen many of her pieces that if I asked her to explain like what's the storyline of this piece, she probably could, but I walked away just feeling deeply about it. So I was like, okay, I trust this. I know it's going to be something. It was very cool to be involved in the festival as a participant for the first year. I've been working on the technical side of things for the last 3 years. So yeah, it felt cool. And I'm not a trained dancer, so it was very cool.
Well, I wanted to ask, yeah. I know you're mainly based singer-songwriter, right?
Yes.
So were you dancing in this show?
Yeah, we were all dancing. Yeah. And I grew up dancing, taking like a little bit of lessons. I have a lot of dancers in my family, and Anna and Christina also both grew up taking lessons, and Kay would always just be like, you're all such good movers. Like, she just called us movers, which I loved. It sort of took us out of like,
yeah, that classical pressure of dance.
Yeah. So we worked on that. That was like a lot of what we had to develop, is all of us feeling comfortable in that movement. And it took a long time, and it took her allowing us to create a lot of our own movements for our body. So yeah, it was totally unique. And I think because it didn't feel like, okay, we learned to dance and now we're going to present it, it took that pressure off. It was like, these are movements as simple as if I was performing in a show and the musical director of the show was like, walk across the stage. Like, that's kind of what it felt like. Mm-hmm. But it was like, okay, put your arm up here and then do a head spin and like a little more involved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask about the collaborative creation process, mm-hmm. Because it was created by four of us.
Yeah.
Four artists.
Yeah.
How did that go? I mean, from the inception, how did it develop? How did it grow?
Yeah. So I think everyone comes with their own sort of way of working and their own set of skills. We're all, you know, individually professional artists. We're all like leaders in our own way. And so kind of those four personalities coming together was really interesting because we all maybe would have had a different approach. So it was a lot of like compromising on approach in a good way, not in a like, I felt compromised. I just learning about how other people work. Our earliest rehearsals were like us just sitting and doing improv exercises, like speaking gibberish to each other, or like, you know, we'd have improv movement exercises where it's like, okay, well, like, just let's work on the contact with the ground or contact with the other person you're working with. And like, Anna comes from a bit more of a theater background, so she would bring sort of like theater direction aspects. Christine and I have like the musical component, so we'd bring that. I mean, Anna has that as well, but, and then Kay would be sort of like a movement coach. So we're all bringing our own expertise and experience. And then a lot of it was just us setting boundaries as well, because the content is super emotional. We're all talking about things like, we're talking about the passing of time and change and growth and grief and, you know, sort of these big existential questions. So a lot of time when we're working, we're having to set those boundaries of like, what are we comfortable with? And it was a really like care-based process. We were all really looking after each other. And if anyone needed to stop, we would all stop and talk about things. And I felt like we were able to ask for what we needed and then also like overcome disagreements really well. It just felt, it felt very safe. And it felt like we, by the time we got into the Grand and were working in the process, we had like a way of working that developed over a year and a half, which was cool, but definitely challenging in a lot of ways. And like, I would love to do more of that kind of thing. I think I'm someone who loves control, so letting go of that control was really cool for me.
I totally get that.
Yeah.
I think control over art is a really interesting thing too, because, you know, as an artist, you have an idea of something in your mind and it's your project, your baby, and then you need to work with other people to bring things to life. And you always get different perspectives that make it richer, but it's hard to sometimes let go of, what's that saying? Kill your darlings. Like sometimes you have to let go.
Totally.
Yeah.
And one of them for me was like, in the incubator process, the show we created happened so quickly that by the time we were performing the show, I felt very disconnected from like, not very disconnected, but I felt like not quite sure of why we were doing it. And so from the beginning of this process, I was like, but why would we do that? Why would we move? Blah, 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 blah. And Kay just kept being like, the why will be clear. Like, let the process happen. The why will become clear. And it did. It, you know, she's been through that sort of full production of a show process before more than I have. I've done music shows, but not sort of this kind of theater show. So trusting that was helpful for me. It was hard to let go of. But another thing I forgot to mention is that we were all coming kind of from this place of working with the book Women Who Run With Wolves, which Anna and Christina were both familiar with. Kay and I learned from them. We both read different amounts. Like, I didn't complete the whole book, but we both read different amounts of the book and drew inspiration from the book. So that was sort of a touchstone that we could come back to. It'd be like, oh, if we need ideas or like ways to fill a space of, you know, let's go to the book and see maybe what we're wearing can be inspired by the book, maybe what, how we're moving or like what our perspective is can be inspired by the book or the why of the situation. So that was interesting. And it's such a deep book and there's so much that, you know, I think I could spend a lifetime getting through it, but from what I read of it, it was really helpful.
For people who don't know, can you give like a brief synopsis? What's the book about?
So it's using storytelling, like the oldest sort of forms of folk stories that the author could find, using storytelling to explain sort of like the inner wildness within all of us and how we can reconnect to that intuition and different ways that that intuition is blocked or maybe challenged throughout our lives. And it's interesting, like to me, it feels like, how do we find our power within us? And it's using stories to help us illustrate ways of like finding our own power. And they're very connected to nature. For me, what was interesting is that initially the book was very frightening for me because I was in a place where I was feeling really closed off and I wasn't feeling connected to my power. And I actually felt kind of afraid of potential, my own potential. I don't know if you've ever experienced that where you're like, I'm afraid to step into my own power. Like, you know, who knows what'll happen? You're not quite ready to hold it. And so when I started reading, part of the reason I haven't read the whole book is when I started reading it, it was a lot and I had to stop quite a bit because it was very emotional. But actually working through this process and exploring stories in the book and exploring my own journey actually like with that fear of my own power, like that's kind of what my narrative in the show was, is overcoming fear of my own self, of my own mind. And working with that allowed me to feel more comfortable with the text itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, transformation is a very uncomfortable thing, I think, for most people.
Yes.
So getting to explore that through I find dance and music to be so emotional. Mm-hmm. Getting to explore transformation in that way would probably be very therapeutic.
It was. It was, yeah, and at the beginning, uncomfortable. Like you're saying, it's I think the who you are before, there's a reason you're not easily stepping into the next stage, right? There's something like blocking or something holding you to that. And that challenge is like ultimately a lesson, but it is, it can be hard. And I feel in the last 18 months, I've absolutely stepped out of that old fear and into this new space. And, you know, the lesson of like trusting myself is there. I don't know if any of this makes sense in context of a show, but
I enjoy it.
We're just chatting. Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to ask, so the performances for After Always have happened, and there was a talk back with the artists on Friday. How did that go? What were people's reactions?
Yeah, it went really well. It actually ended up doing it every performance.
Oh.
Because it felt very, I guess, collective way to end the whole thing. And it's something like this that feels so abstract. It feels strange to just send people out into the wild and not know whether they enjoyed it or not. And so the Friday one, we got lots of positive reactions, emotional reactions. We had people saying that it like really touched them. We had someone say that there was like, they felt anxious, but I think in a way of like, oh, I see myself represented in this in a way that I also want to change. Hopefully not in a negative way. It didn't come across as negative. And I can relate to that of like, you see some piece of art that you're like, oh, I want to like feel that way, you know, and it makes you kind of like, okay, there's some tension. And just the curiosity of people of like, how did you come up with this? Like, what is your relationship altogether? I think a lot of the feedback we got was that people were really interested in our dynamic as a group, and that we had this like trust between us that felt really palpable, I guess. I feel it obviously, but to them it's cool that that translated to them as well. So yeah, I would say across the nights that the interest in seeing the four of us together as a group and how we work together and the trust was a big theme. And then people who had read the book connecting to the stages of the book. And one other piece of it is that we all went to see a psychic together.
Fun.
The four of us, yeah. Her name's Deb Savoy. She's incredible. I would highly recommend going to see her. And we recorded our session, and we ended up using dialogue from that session in the show over the music. And she actually ended up coming to the show on Friday as well. And she was very, she's read the book, and she spoke about the book and the relationship to the show very positively. And it was just very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. The performance as a part of the Ground Up Dance Festival is complete, but
yes.
You mentioned potential future iterations. Would you ever try to bring this show somewhere else?
Yeah, I think it really depends on everyone's timeline. Like I said, we're all professional, working, individual people who have our own sort of paths, and I think if it lined up, I won't speak for everyone, I would definitely be interested in doing it again in some form. Part of the benefit of doing it as a part of the festival is now that we're like, we have videos of it and photos, like we're a bit more eligible to apply for other festivals, that kind of thing. And I imagine if it was in a different iteration, it would change and continue to grow. But yeah, can't say yes or no for sure, but I'm interested.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On to the Ground Up Dance Festival as a whole.
Yes.
Yeah, so it started June 25th, going until July 12th. Now that After Always is complete, yes. Are you still involved in the festival?
Yeah, so my main role in the festival since its first year has been providing technical support. So just because I'm a musician, I'm familiar with gear and that kind of thing. So it's a very fancy title, but it's literally just renting gear and setting it up and providing music and that kind of thing. Part of what makes that challenging is that the festival happens, the main stage event happens at Lake Ontario Park. So it's outdoors and you kind of have to be, yeah. Anyway, all that to say, I'm doing tech, but there's also lots of other classes and things that go on throughout the festivals that I'll probably attend. And it's just awesome. And I love to dance and I love to move. And you can go to workshops to dance and move. So I can run you through a little bit of what's happening, if that would be helpful.
I would love to hear more about the festival.
First of all, so for anyone who doesn't know, the Ground Up Dance Festival is a professional dance festival with a focus on contemporary styles of dance. Throughout all of next week, there are going to be workshops in the morning that you can attend and meet other movers in the community. On Monday, there's going to be a yoga class, which is a great way to start the week, 9:30 at Scandi Flow. Tuesday, Sasha Jimenez French will be leading a youth contemporary class for youth 12 to 18 years of age. It'll be $15. It's going to be at the Baby Grand at 9:30 a.m. On the Wednesday, July 9th, there'll be a contemporary class with Ellen Fury at the Baby Grand as well. The following day, there'll be a partnering workshop. There's an amazing duo that came from Montreal last year, and they'll be running a workshop on how to dance with partners. That will be at 9:30 as well. And then on the Saturday, there'll be another contemporary dance workshop with Jesse Garon of Vasari Arts. I believe I'm saying that correctly. So those are kind of like workshop of the week of the festival. The Thursday night of July 10th, there'll be a line dancing event at the Buckle, so you can come hang out, line dance. If you haven't been to the Buckle, it's awesome, super good vibes. And then the main stage event, which will be closing the festival, will be happening at Lake Ontario Park on the concrete platform down by the water. So if you like walk into Lake Ontario Park and go down the stairs, there's a big hill and everyone just sits on the hill. I recommend bringing like a picnic blanket or chairs. It's not like super flat ground, but if you need flat ground, you can sit kind of closer to the bottom or the top. And then yeah, bring some snacks. Miss Bao will be there doing like a pop-up food tent if you want to buy some food. And then it's like at sunset, so it starts at 7 p.m. It's a sliding scale entry fee from I think $15 to $25. Pay what you can. And there's five incredible performances that will be happening at sunset overlooking the water. Beautiful. Every year it's been beautiful. And yeah, that's the 11th and the 12th. So that's sort of like the run of events.
Do you need experience for any of these workshops or is it any level?
Yeah, any level. The only restriction is the Tuesday is for youth only.
Right.
But other than that, you can come at any level. And my mom and I both went last year and like we're in and out at different points. Like I was sitting out sometimes because it was too much for me or whatever. And she's in and out at different points. So it's truly whatever. Yeah, yeah, whatever you want. Yeah, there is a fee for each session. I think they're all around $15, except maybe the partnering session is, I think, $50. And then there's a discounted price for artists and students as well.
You've been working on the festival since year one, doing tech. How have you seen it change and grow?
Yeah, hugely. Like, I'm not the person doing this at all. It's definitely Kay Kenny, Camille Spencer, and, I mean, Lauren Runyons is the festival manager this year. Last year, it was Laura Shigon. There's lots of other people involved, too, but that crew has really made it happen, specifically Camille and Kay, and it's grown from being kind of like one show to like a week to now it's this sort of longer 2.5 week, 3 week event. And every year I think the word is getting out more. One thing that I've learned a lot from Kay is that dance as a medium is not really recognized the same way that like music is recognized or even visual arts is recognized. You know, there's like Agnes Etherington for visual arts. There's all these venues for music. And obviously we have dance schools here, but it's not the first thing that people think of when they think of arts in the city. And hopefully as the festival continues to grow, dance becomes like more of a prominent and present art in Kingston for people to consider going to see. I think if you're in Montreal or Toronto or Ottawa, it's more accessible or it like makes more sense. But here it's taken a little bit of like effort to bring that to the forefront, which I think is amazing. And I think the women that are involved in creating that it's incredible. I'm so happy that it's happening.
Yeah. Yeah. When you think about like going out and experiencing some live art, I don't think people typically think to go see a dance.
Yeah. I think it's also what you grow up with. Like if you grew up going to live music, which I think a lot of people do, like you know, I think lots of kids grew up going to the Skeleton Park Arts Festival, which is amazing. And even before the inaugural year of the festival, the kind of seed of it was a dance performance that happened at Skeleton Park. You know what I mean? And so lots of kids are getting exposed to dance that way. And they've been sort of, the Ground Up Festival and Movement, it's all kind of been started by this collective called Movement Market. And they try to go into community spaces and get people involved and get kids involved in dance and adults as well. It's like you don't have to be 5 years old to start dancing.
Yeah. Maybe this is just me. I love dance.
Yeah.
I'm like, my mom was a dancer. It's always been a part of my life. And I find it such a cathartic art form because it's physical. It's embodied. You're not just looking at something. I mean, if you're watching a dance, but you're seeing bodies move and you see the emotion through the physicality.
Absolutely.
And I think that's something that we're not so comfortable with anymore. Like in our modern day society, I think we're all pretty tamped down and reserved physically. Like, but physical movement is so important, so human.
Yeah, totally. And I think something that I've admired about how Kay and Movement Market have brought dance to the forefront is that it feels accessible to me. I don't have like a natural dancer's body from like the classical sort of European contemporary sense, whatever, which like I think when you're growing up and you're in dance classes, that can feel like the only route. But Kay has exposed me to so many different forms of dance and like so many different types of bodies in dance that like I just feel like I can be a part of that world, which is really cool. It feels, it feels more accessible.
Yeah, and it should be. I mean, now I'm thinking of like folk stories, folk dance. Like,
totally.
Dance has always been a very prominent part of all cultures. Like, all cultures have their own dances and histories with movement.
Absolutely.
I think it's such an important art form.
Yeah, it's really cool. And I'm just excited that we're in a city that, like, I mean, it's not happening out without a lot of work, but that is like slowly opening to dance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So having now participated in, I mean, over a year of kind of workshopping and working on a movement project or a multidisciplinary movement project, do you think you would try to incorporate more dance into your future art?
I would love to. I mean, I love working with dancers already. In my like final project I did when I went to school and I had a big music presentation, I included my sister-in-law who's a dancer, Charlotte Tessier, and like she danced on stage while I performed. And I've done two music videos working with Camille and Kay and Sasha, and then as well Charlotte and I moved in one of my music videos. So I like, it's always sort of been there, I think, because of my friendship and connection with the dance community already. I personally would love to continue to practice dance and work on dance. My music in its current iteration is not exactly like me dancing on stage and singing at the same time, because it's more folky. I'm often playing at the same time, but I love the idea of including other people in that and like adding movement to my shows. Yeah.
So what's next for you?
Good, hard question. The constant struggle. No, I'm playing in a duo with my partner, Logan Brown, who's an incredible musician and comedian. And he has super generously learned a bunch of my music and added really beautiful textures to it with his guitar playing and his singing. So we're in the process of putting together songs to be recorded. We're going to go record with my dear friend Angus Fay in Toronto, hopefully, over the next kind of into the fall. That's going to be happening. And the idea is sort of to get an EP's worth of video and songs as a duo to use to sort of move into this new era of performing. And that we'll all be starting off this Saturday. Actually, Logan and I are going to do a first sort of like professional duo performance at the Mansion Summer Kickoff Festival. It's an outdoor event. We'll be playing at 3:45 for like 45 minutes. You can come and kind of see the vibes. And then from there, I mentioned to you before we started recording, I'm really interested in creating spaces to sing musical theater, because I love musical theater, but I don't have time to be in shows right now. So hopefully putting together some kind of like musical theater cabaret event. I also am a voice teacher, so continuing to cultivate my student base. Also hoping I'm interested in getting granting to do subsidized teaching and renting space for people who can't afford to take lessons to come and teach. So all over the place, but those are kind of the main things in my brain right now.
Yeah, accessibility in arts. Obviously you are very practiced and comfortable in the arts, mm-hmm. but for people listening who maybe haven't had all this experience but are curious and want to get involved, it can feel a little intimidating. What advice do you have for them?
That's a great question. I think the way I started was open mic. So if you're a musician, you're interested in that, you can like pretty much guarantee that if you go to an open mic and play, there'll be people of every level. So if you're like, I'm going to be the worst one, it's like, not that there's like a ranking of who's good and bad, but like everyone is starting at a different spot. So just like try out an open mic. There's an open mic every other Wednesday at the Tunanog that my partner Logan hosts. The Tuesday open mic at Musiki Cafe. I know Spearhead is an open mic. The Wolf Island Grill has the hotel has a every other Wednesday open mic as well. So finding those spaces that you can just go and try stuff. I host a youth open mic that happens monthly throughout the school year at the Broom Factory and other locations throughout the community. So like keep an eye out for that. If you're even like not at the point of wanting to perform yet, but you're like, but you're not there yet, just taking some lessons or like getting together with your friends and playing music, at least in front of somebody. It doesn't have to be an audience. And yeah, just finding other like-minded people. I think that's music specific, but in anything, I would say just find somebody who's doing the thing you want to be doing and maybe be like, how did you get there? You know, how did you start doing this? Hopefully following the vision of the thing that you actually love and not the thing that you think like, oh, it'll be so cool if I could do that, you know, like mm-hmm. really follow the passion that you're excited about and not the thing that you think will make you interesting.
Yeah.
I've made that mistake before.
Doing art for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think that will end up being the most authentic and also, yeah, not being afraid to try something that seems out of your comfort zone. Like, you know, the dancers I've met and the videographers and photographers and artists outside of the music realm have only enhanced my experience as a musician. So
yeah beautiful.
Just go to things, meet people, I don't know,
learn.
Yeah. I'm noticing a trend that I really love of my friends and my fellow musicians getting off Spotify. And I know this is like a huge statement, I'm just saying this because it's kind of top of mind right now. My friends in the band Burrs out of Toronto just posted about it, and my friend Emily Steinwell is very vocal about it, and I currently use the platform, like this is just really prominent in my mind right now, but I'm interested in trying to get off of Spotify because of the way that the CEO is behaving, where he's putting his money, the fact that the artists aren't getting paid. And so I'm just kind of like putting this out there as like, let's keep talking about what happens if artists start taking their stuff off of Spotify. For me, it's hard because I'm like, that's where my people listen, you know? And I don't know if I'm like there yet. Anyway, I don't know. I'm just putting that. I think it's interesting.
I haven't really heard much about that.
Yeah.
What's the drive to get off of Spotify?
Just to speak off of what my friends in the band Burrs posted about, Burrs Music, B-U-R-S Music on Instagram. The Spotify CEO has invested like $700 million in war technology when it's like his artists are making, you know what I mean? It's like, first of all, we don't want money going there. Second of all, you have that much money lying around and you're making all this money and your artists are making like less than pennies per play. You know what I mean? So, I mean, Tidal and Bandcamp, there's all these other options. Even Apple Music is better than Spotify. It's like, I'm not even speaking from a place of having figured this out and knowing for sure that this is what I'm doing. I would like to work towards this.
Yeah, but it is a hard thing because, you know, as a musician, you obviously want listeners and you want people to be able to access your music. But
yeah.
So that's a debate.
Yeah, I think I'm like, ooh, let me talk about something that I'm in process with.
Yeah.
And hoping to get off Spotify in the next, you know, few years in a way that feels realistic. And I think if we all just did it, it would happen. That's the thing with these movements, right? It's like, if we all just did it.
It takes a collective.
Yeah. So putting it out there as a, like, let's keep talking about it.
Yeah, something for people to think on.
Totally.
Love that.
Other than that, I'm Savannah Shea Music on Instagram.
Amazing. This was so much fun talking with
you. Yes, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for coming. And good luck with the rest of the festival.
Thank you. Yes, please come out and see live dance in Kingston. Support it July 11th and 12th.
Let's go. You just heard Savannah Shea and myself, Ellie Sturton, talk about the Ground Up Dance Festival and the performance After Always. Now, coming away from that conversation with grants and artist economics on the mind, I thought it was only right to spotlight a project being run by the Kingston Arts Council. So I sat down with the Kingston Arts Council program coordinator to find out more.
I'm BC Gorey, and I am the program and communications coordinator here at the Kingston Arts Council. I've been working here for about a year, and since that time, I've been working really closely with Nicole Daniels, the executive director, to try and make Kingston a better city for artists in general. What we really try and do is connect artists to different resources in the city, whether that be financial opportunities. We really try and make sure that artists here have the tools that they need to be successful here in Kingston. We also administer the City of Kingston Arts Fund and the Nan Yeoman's Grant for Artistic Development. And those are two granting programs that really try and give artists the funds that they need to create the art that makes the city so special.
In an effort to increase funding and better support Kingston-based artists, the council started their Artist Prosperity Project.
The Artist Prosperity Project was something that we began working on when we were trying to advocate for better funding in the city. And we kept running into barriers when people would ask for data on how artists were doing financially. And unfortunately, that data just doesn't exist. So we worked hard to develop this survey and this project to collect that raw data on how artists are faring financially and in their artistic practices, so we can better advocate for the resources and finances that they need. The survey asked questions about income in general, so how artists are doing in terms of their day jobs and artistic practice, as well as artistic income. We're trying to gauge how many professional artists here in the city are able to make a basic living off of their art, how many need to supplement their income, and then in addition to that, we're looking to see how art is made here. So there's a lot of questions about the market in Kingston, how artists are reaching their audiences, how they're pricing their artwork, and what barriers are they facing in doing so, and what support they believe that they best need for those things. So it's not just about the financial realities of Kingston artists, which is really important and a huge aspect of the survey, but also how is art here being made? How has that changed? And do these preconceived notions that we have about art in Kingston, are they different than the realities that artists here are facing?
Currently, the only data that we have on Kingston artists and their financial situation comes from the Canadian Census.
That happens every few years and really only collects data from professional artists who are able to speak on their income throughout the year or have listed themselves as professional artists, which unfortunately is not the majority of artists here in Kingston. Most have to have a second job or a primary source of income, and they get lost in all of that data. And a lot of that data is not super accessible to everyday people. So in addition to the survey, we want to take this raw data and put it into an easy to read and understand format that artists and arts advocacy groups can then use to better speak on what they need and how they can be better helped from these granting bodies, municipalities, from, you know, provincial or federal services, as well as be able to better price their art and their work. If they know the financial realities of other artists, they might be able to really look at the art they're creating and the market that is here in Kingston and hopefully be able to price their work a little bit better for themselves and get paid a little bit more.
In order to get relevant and specific data, the survey is currently only available to artists who work with music, visual arts, and performance art.
When we applied for the grant to be able to do this project itself, we had to specify what kinds of groups and disciplines we were advocating for. And we settled on visual arts, music, and performing arts, as they are rather large disciplines here in Kingston. Unfortunately, that did mean that other arts disciplines like literary arts or film did get left behind. However, we do really want to stress that this is the first edition of this survey and this project. And just due to capacity, we were only able to include 3 disciplines. But as the survey grows and gets bigger, we're hoping to include film, literary arts, and other distinct arts disciplines into the survey as time goes on, as those groups also desperately need the advocacy work that we're trying to do. Unfortunately, it just was a capacity issue.
This is not a short-term or small-scale project by any means, but BC Gorey remains determined.
Yeah, I've been working on this project and survey for over almost a year now, and it takes so much time to develop the questions and work with the groups. We worked with a lot of community partners to make sure that the questions were representative of their groups and the questions that they themselves think were needed and the information that they thought would be really helpful for their own advocacy. So it takes a lot of time and effort. And unfortunately, I'm just one man and I'm trying to do the best that I possibly can with the limited resources we have. But that's a great thing about the Kingston Arts Council is no matter what we're always trying to advocate for artists here in the city, even if that takes some time.
The Artist Prosperity Survey has been generating responses, but the call for artist submissions is far from over.
So far, the response has been quite strong. We do need a rather large response for the data to be effective, so we are trying to get a really high turnout. Right now, we're sitting about the halfway point of the survey's launch, and we're really looking for a strong response rate. Right now, we're doing pretty okay, but if that number could be higher, the more people who filled out the survey, the more people who respond, the better we can use that data and advocate for the arts. Overall, it seems to be having a pretty good response, and people feel like the questions are kind of hitting the nails on the head of what people are looking for help and aid with. So hopefully all of the data that we've collected so far really becomes usable for the future.
Currently, the survey response deadline is July 11th. However, this could change.
We are looking into possible extensions of that deadline depending on response rate. Right now, our responses haven't slowed down at all. We're continually gaining more and more responses. And if that response rate continues in that fashion, we're going to extend the deadline just so people feel like they're able to have their voices heard in the city. But as of right now, it is July 11th.
The core driver of this survey is, of course, the lack of funding and financial security within the arts sector. Gorey noted that the value of art, especially in a tourist economy like Kingston, is often misunderstood.
For me personally, I feel like art is continually undervalued and underfunded because it is something so intangible. And people don't necessarily see the work that goes into creating art because they see it as just entertainment value. They don't see it as the months and years that goes into that practice or creating that art. And it's the first thing that gets cut because people just see it as something that people do for fun or as a hobby. But Kingston has a thriving art sector in terms of the art that's being created. And it's something that brings in a lot of money to the city through tourism, through education, through people wanting to move here because of how great the arts are. And for a city of our size, we outpace the artistic output of other major cities. So it's a bit of a shame that people don't necessarily see that financial value of art, even though art is a huge driver of Kingston's economy in terms of tourism and development. Our goal is to really be able to use this data to show that there are a lot of artists here in Kingston just by the sheer number of people who have applied to the survey, but then also pointing to the information that they've given us, you know, showing that, you know, artists in the performing arts on average are making this much money, and, you know, here is what artists at the top of the scale are making, and how do we shift, you know, the economy over to that and to reflect this, and maybe some disciplines are doing better than others, and how can we better disperse funding so it reflects all of these diverse arts groups is something that we're really hoping to be able to start discussions on with this survey.
Despite the presence of artists and art all across Canada, arts funding continues to be cut. Funding to Canada's Council for the Arts was cut in 2024 and again in 2025. These kinds of cuts are detrimental to artists who often rely heavily on grants for income.
I'm a theater artist myself, and I've definitely seen what the lack of funding for the arts in recent years has felt for our own industry. And as someone who works for the Kingston Arts Council, I've seen a large uptick in people using our granting resources. We have a grants board where people can filter and sort for different artistic grants, either at the municipal, provincial, or federal level. And that has seen a huge spike in traffic within the last 2 years. And that just goes to show that people are, A, looking for more funding, but the fact that these resources are being more heavily used speaks to sort of this level of intensity that artists are feeling to try and find funding for their work. And unfortunately, that does mean that more people are applying, which is kind of nice. But on the other hand, that means more competition for each of these grants.
When local funding becomes scarce, there's a tendency towards larger artistic capitals, which can then deplete the artistic populations of smaller cities like Kingston.
When grants and funds start to dwindle, it becomes a little bit harder for artists to feel like they can make a living. And unfortunately, what that ends up leading to is them amalgamating in large cities like Toronto and Ottawa, which leads to a bit of a brain drain and a bit of a talent reduction here in smaller cities like Kingston. And that's what we're really trying to fight here with the survey and with the CCAF and with all of the grants and resources that we're trying here with the Arts Council. We're really trying to retain artists and talent here in the city and show them that Kingston is a city where arts can thrive and people can make a living off of their work.
Gorey encourages any Kingston artists to get involved and fill out the survey.
They can take a look at the survey at our website at artskingston.ca/artistprosperityproject. They can also just give Artist Prosperity Project a click Google and it'll pop up there. We worked really hard to make sure that that shows up on a Google search. And they can fill it out on our website. It takes about 15 to 20 minutes. And the feedback there is really invaluable. So the more people who fill it out, the better. And it's all hosted on our website, super easy to complete. And you can come back to the survey and fill it out. It will record and save your information as you're filling it out, so you don't have to do it all inside it. I really hope that the survey does make an impact, because Kingston has a great art scene and there's such phenomenal arts here. I'm just tired of seeing all my friends and great artists move to Toronto, Ottawa, because they feel like they can't make a living here. And I hope that this really starts some positive changes.
That was BC Gorey from the Kingston Arts Council discussing their Artist Prosperity Project. Now, just before we wrap up this segment of the Kingston Curator, I thought I would play one of Savannah Shea's recent songs. Enjoy Savannah Shea's Love Walks.
build a home inside myself. Will you draw maps across my skin? I've wanted to be seen for who I am, and you look at me and say that I am everything. Slow to open through the hurt and through the broken, a heart that's hoping someday will learn that love walks and love talks like a whisper in my ear, saying, honey, let go of your fear.
That's all for this week's installation of The Kingston Curator. I'm your host, Ellie Sturton, and you can catch me each week Friday at 3 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM. Have a great weekend.
KPP Concerts has a stacked lineup of all-ages concerts happening at the Broom Factory through this summer into early fall. On June 27th, check out Housewife, followed by Friday's Child at the Broom Factory on July 11th. Then on August 10th, enjoy music from hip-hop artist Matt Mac, followed later by The Dirty Nil on September 19th. Then on September 26th, it's Petite Belle Yvonne and neo-grunge icons The Bridge City Sinners coming to town on September 27th. And then Yukon Blonde gets us into the fall spirit on September 28th. All shows are all ages at the Broom Factory and co-presented by CFRC 101.9 FM. For a complete list of shows and ticket information, visit kppconcerts.com. Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present Kingston by Stone Hunter. The new track is a heartfelt song that explores a love story set on Kingston's iconic landmarks and serene natural beauty. It serves as a personal tribute to the city's unique charm, guiding listeners on a vivid journey through its scenic sights, all while weaving in universal themes of memory, connection, and nostalgia. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Kingston by Stone Hunter on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
King and queen standing side by side beneath this peaceful autumn sky. red brick with a limestone reaching high. I saw forever in your eyes. St. Mary chimes for heroes might. Golden Naples made fireside. You said that it's time to fly and gently faded from my life. The lake is weighing on the sun. Paradise side. The thousand islands drift on by. I feel forever in your smile. On Henley's Hill, the world was white. Each crystal shone with diamond light. You said that spring would make things right.
Kingston families looking for an unforgettable summer adventure for your kids? Look no further than Assas Camps right on Queen's University campus. Assas Camps offers English and French programming for children ages 4 to 12. Campers participate in crafts, games, experiments, field trips, and activities with special weekly guests. Assas staff ensures a safe, packed summer with memories that'll last a lifetime. Spots are filling up fast, so register now at assascamps.ca.
Hey, it's Emily Steele, and you're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM.
Since its inception in 2022, CFRC Power Plays has become the number one destination for all things Queens football.
And that is a touchdown for the Gales!
With over 50 million lifetime views, CFRC Power Plays is the defining voice in Queens football coverage.
Looking for Nico Cuomo! Cuomo! My goodness! Nico Cuomo with a touchdown!
Follow us today on Instagram at CFRC Power Plays, your number one spot for rock solid football action.
And good afternoon. It is 4 o'clock. Thanks for tuning in to CFRC 101.9 FM.